Hello and welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, co-host of the Trauma Super Conference. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Christine Schaffner, a board-certified naturopathic doctor who's helped thousands of people recover from chronic and complex illnesses. Through online summits, her Spectrum of Health podcast, a network of eminence health clinics, and renowned online programs, Dr. Schaffner goes beyond biological medicine, pulling from all systems of medicine and healing modalities, helping patients reclaim their wellness and reveal their brightest light. With her diverse skill set, Dr. Schaffner seeks to improve access, outcomes, and speed of recovery for patients struggling with chronic, complex, and mystery illnesses. Patients travel from all around the world to reclaim their wellness using her eco methodology. Dr. Christine, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Megan.
So I'd love if you could start by explaining to us what the ecosystem of healing is and how does it specifically help people healing trauma?
Yeah, absolutely. So whenever, you know, people are kind of wanting to connect with our office and understanding our approach, if they're choosing, you know, to establish care with us, you know, we always have to kind of share like how we're thinking, you know, what is our thought process? And, you know, it's really hard to kind of label a non-linear kind of very like outside the norm of what conventional medical systems, you know, use to kind of label, diagnose, give one treatment, move on, right? So we took a stab at it. And over the last few years, we've been kind of using this system to explain really how we approach healing. And, you know, I'll break that down and kind of share, you know, how this relates to trauma in a moment as well. So the first E in the eco is environment and terrain. So I'm a terrain person. I'm a naturopathic physician. I've also studied bioregulatory medicine. So it's really about our response and resilience and our ability to adapt to the outside world rather than the outside world just, you know, is this threat that, you know, just by interacting with everybody has the same response. So it's a very kind of more empowering way to look at health and healing. And we even know the father of germ theory, Louis Pasteur, even kind of did a full, you know, 180 on his deathbed and said, you know, really the terrain is everything. So the environment and terrain is all about, you know, how can we look at everyone's individual health story, you know, what makes them unique, what they might have been exposed to over the years. And really, you know, I think a big part of why people are so sick these days is the ever mounting, increasing environmental toxicant burden that's affecting the human body. So that's kind of bucket number one. And then the second E in EECO or ECO is energy system support. And this is kind of an area of passion of mine. And I think there's a lot of ways we can look at it when we think about trauma and healing trauma, but it's thinking about the body beyond our biochemical makeup, right? We're these physical bodies, but we're also interacting with energy fields. We interact with light and sound and frequency and electrical and magnetic fields and, you know, all sorts of, you know, ways to look at the body in the way that it communicates and that it can heal with these factors. And also that it can get imbalanced, you know, with assaults to this energy system. The next kind of acronym is C, or clearing the blocks. And this is really out of bioregulatory medicine, what we call interference fields. So these can be areas that are really interfering with the body's innate ability to self-regulate and heal. And so what we often see in our patient populations, there can be things, what we call focal infections. So these hidden infections in the body that the body isn't able to mount a healthy response to heal and kind of repair that tissue and move on. But it kind of becomes like this reservoir of chronic infection that can like slowly poison the lymphatics and the nervous system and, you know, be an entry of bugs into the circulatory system. So that can be in the sinuses or the tonsils or in the mouth. So we focus on that. And then we look at the impact scars can have on the body. And scars can definitely affect, you know, not only the surrounding lymphatics and the fascia, but also there can be fascial memory. and there can be trauma that lives in the tissues and in the scar tissue. And we can go, you know, deeper into that if we'd like. And then the last, label is O, or optimizing flow. And that's really my naturopathic roots, really supporting the lymphatics and, the organs of elimination. So proper bioflow and hydration and, bowel movements and breathing and sweating and, all the things that we need to have that, even though we see patients that are pretty complicated, at the end of the day, we need to do a lot of foundational support to help people heal and recover. And there's that equation we're always trying to balance: is the body eliminating in a healthy way and in a way that it can keep up with the treatments and also the toxic burden that we're all up against. So that's my summary of how I approach treatment, treatment and patient care. And again, often it's not linear, like you go from one E and then the other and then the C and then the O. It's kind of this interplay between all of these, but these are all the buckets that we're looking at when we're really trying to recover somebody's health.
And it's both fascinating and frustrating, I'm sure, for people, because they're so used to the traditional methodology of doctors and medicine, and what people normally have the quickest access to. And so they're used to going in and having somebody be like, I can fix this with this, and goodbye, I'll see you in 6 to 8 weeks or never again if it fixes your problem. And with the approaches that you're describing, and I know that because I've been on a journey with a functional nutritionist over the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it's slow going and it takes time. And it's however, I will address the skeptics in the room. I don't get colds and flus and stuff. Like, I have children. I used to get them every 6 weeks, if that. And now that I've started working with the functional nutritionist, healing my gut, like addressing this particular one piece of a whole person system, I'm like looking for wood to knock on.
I know.
Right. It's been fascinating. Like, the most acute thing that I can say. So I have complete respect for your work, and I wish that more people had acceptability or access and open-mindedness, and the resources, just like financially and in their areas, for everybody to have this kind of care. 'Cause I think it's amazing.
Thank you. I mean, that's on my heart too. And I hope in my professional, career in my lifetime, we see some great strides and all the things that you mentioned. And, usually, people don't really start with us. They usually kind of end up in our clinic. And, there are some people who are more, holistically minded, but often, it's because people often fall through the cracks or don't have the answers in the conventional medical system. And, again, conventional medicine, we need it for trauma care, surgery, really acute, things, and really, specific things. But in the chronic illness world, this is where I think they fall short, just kind of how you shared, because they really look at the body in these like disparate systems rather than the highly interconnected, being. And the more that you look at the body in a holistic manner, the more healing happens for the individual. So I hope in our lifetimes, Megan, that we see a big shift. And I think the times that we're in are calling for more and more change for the medical system, and people are desiring, right, a different approach, so we're getting there. We're getting there.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we know from all of the data and the research, trauma and trauma experiences, increase, and stress for that matter, because they all go hand in hand, they increase mental health symptoms, they increase, body illness, inflammation, autoimmune diseases. Like, these are the scientific facts. And so people who have experienced trauma, how do you approach that when you're trying to treat somebody? Obviously there's acute trauma, like if somebody had to have an emergency C-section or they've had a major, invasive procedure on their body, that's kind of a more obvious one. But when it's more of a covert trauma experience, those kinds of things that can affect the way that your body and your nervous system are able to process information, stress, day-to-day life, and the way that that increases your sensitivity to your environment. How do you address that with people?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I'm in the camp too. So there's typically, as you mentioned, like the ACEs and the like vulnerability for people to be more vulnerable epigenetically to have a chronic illness. And then there's really like the trauma of being sick in, you know, our society these days, because again, what we just laid out, you know, often people go undiagnosed for years, even decades. They often get mislabeled, they get minimized, you know, not validated. And one of the most healing things that I think happens in my office is when we start, you know, care with someone is that the validation, right? That this is not just, you know, a psychosomatic illness that is, you know, in their head, that there are real factors. And so I just wanted to put that out there, because I think there's these two aspects of trauma in our community. And so, you know, trauma is fascinating, right? I mean, I think we're learning more and more. And I think about in my you know, way of approaching it, you know, I think about, okay, how does trauma impact the body, right? And we know that it can impact what we call the fascia, and I can go through that. I mean, it can impact the vagus nerve, it can impact the limbic brain. And then it kind of sounds a little esoteric, but there's more and more, you know, conversations around how trauma can actually be in the field of information and energy that surrounds us and can be stored there. And then it can affect coherent communication from the field to the body, and that can translate to disease. And so, you know, I think about all these ways that trauma can show up, like, and can create illness. You know, that's kind of aside from the obvious of the suffering that it can, you know, create for people. And so I think an obvious place to start, if you're okay with it, is in the, you know, how does it show up in the body? And, you know, I already talked about scars. I think scars are such a good illustration. If you don't mind, I'll go there. So when I work with someone, often we just really try to stabilize them, find an entry point. I use a ton of all of my naturopathic modalities, but I also use a lot of bioenergetics to help me be a detective to kind of where to start and how to approach the patient, so we can, you know, really get momentum. And usually it's that first, you know, 3 months where we're really kind of stabilizing so the body can receive and release, right? And so those are important aspects. And again, everyone's on their own time, of course, as well. So when we, you know, do kind of our checklist and think about, okay, if people have, you know, scars, you know, again, thinking about optimizing flow and the impact of the fascia and the lymphatics, it can be really helpful for releasing stuck energy in the physical body. But what time and time again has shown me is that there's so much more impact that this has on the body's, you know, ability to communicate. So when we think about scar tissue, there are these really beautiful pictures, by the way. Dr. Jean-Claude Gumberto is a French hand surgeon, and he did these beautiful pictures in his surgery. He recorded them and then has a beautiful book looking at like the human living fascia. But he has these really wild pictures about scar tissue and how scar tissue is like really more dense and irregular and kind of less, you know, fluid and less mobile. So it's kind of this like traffic jam and like the beautiful kind of original fascia that the body creates. Its job isn't to look like the original fascia. It's just to plug a hole and help, you know, prevent, you know, any, you know, more injury in that tissue. And so what we find is when we start creating movement and, you know, support in that area, that there's this often a storage, not only of toxicants or pathogens that we often treat, but we kind of think about the fascia is also holding memory in that tissue. And a couple people theorize why. The thing that makes the most sense to me is the role of structured water in the body and how water can hold information. And so in this kind of fascial kind of scar tissue is a memory. And so when you start, I use neural therapy, so I'm using an injection to actually go in, you know, and help to break up the scar tissue, create more fluidity. And often, if the patient feels supported, if it, all the right, you know, things kind of are lined up, there can be a letting go. And I think that letting go and that release of body memory, of fascial memory, is just as important as getting, like, you know, bile moving and getting like, you know, mercury out of the body and all of that. Like it's, you know, just this release of somatic memory. So I think that's just a illustration there of trauma in the body that I think people are more and more keen to with people like yourself and Alex, you know, doing these conferences. But I feel it's still wildly misunderstood. And sometimes I have really sensitive patients who can have a sense of it, but don't have a way to articulate how they have this stored kind of energy that's affecting, you know, regulation and physical, you know, physical changes in their system. So I'll just pause a moment before keeping on going. But I'm sure that's been talked about in this summit as well.
Well, and you're the star of the show, so you can talk as long as you want.
But
I find it so interesting, especially in the way that you were talking about receive and release. And we were speaking earlier about just the trauma of not only illness, especially if you haven't been listened to and believed, but pain as well is so transformative and can be so dismissed by medical professionals in a not dealing with the symptom, but dealing with the cause of the pain kind of way, just like illness, right? And so when you talk about receiving, teaching people how to or creating the environment of support that you do so that someone's ready to actually receive help and release the protected part of themselves that they've had to put up because they've been so gaslit or dismissed or disregarded in their own healthcare journey.
Yeah, it's such a great point. And, you know, the timing of all that is, you know, this is kind of like a beginning place, you know, that I start with the scars because of all the ways that it helps to, you know, just free up energy in the body. But, you know, what I've learned over the years, there's a timing for everybody. And then as you go through treatment, there can be you know, conditions and the stars align within the body and within, you know, the environment that the person's ready to, you know, move through these things. And so it's really like the keen practitioner to like really make sure we're getting the right support at the right time. And, you know, I think this awareness around trauma is so important, but, you know, what I've seen is like, you can't just go into people's trauma, right? You know, like the body has to be ready as we're talking about. And then there's this wild thing that also happens too, Megan, that when the body is releasing trauma, it's kind of like this intersection, especially when we look at the body through the lens of like the fascia and the connective tissue, like trauma can be stored, toxicants can be kind of lodged in that space, pathogens like stealth pathogens like Lyme and co-infections can be lodged in space. So all of a sudden there's this area of stuck, kind of, you know, isolated, you know, basically the stuck energy in the system that that's been contributing to illness over time. And all of a sudden you get movement. And let's say we talk about just for the scar kind of injection idea, you get this release. And if you're not kind of keen to know that the body can start mobilizing toxicants and also the immune system can be interacting with the infections a little bit more because there's more movement, less stuck energy in that system. You can see after a trauma release, somebody can also feel like they're going into a healing crisis on a physical level. So often, it's, you know, kind of really making sure, you know, that, you know, person is supported. And then, excuse me, my throat's a little dry. And then also like making sure maybe binders or, you know, hydration or great immune support. Because if you don't follow that up, there can be other issues that emerge that might you know, just stymie the, you know, the progress that people feel from that trauma release, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And it reminds me a lot of what I usually tell people when they start digging around in their wellness, which is, it always feels like, and pick your place. But I always say like a garage where like the closet that you've been shoving things into that you don't want to look at. Right. And in order to organize, clean, and make choices about what's in there, you've got to make a bigger mess first sometimes. And then everything's kind of scattered all over the place. And it can be very overwhelming, but then as time goes on, like the organization starts, you start to let go of things, you start to, so if you can follow that metaphor, but, yeah, everybody thinks it's going to be, you know, I go in, I have this shot, if you will, into a scar where I'm kind of moving some trauma and some fascia around, and then everything's better. Ta-da!
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's not necessarily how it happens, is it?
Yeah, I know. And I think there's like this, you know, I'm an optimist for sure. You know, for sure with this work, you kind of have to be, but you know, this idea of like, especially I think in American culture, like hurry up and heal, you know, like give me the thing, like get this to go away, move on to the life, move on to, you know, go back to my life. And while, you know, of course I want to alleviate suffering and not see people suffer for prolonged periods of time, you know, the more that we can really like embrace and kind of lean into the journey of this process, that's where I see some of my patients do the deepest healing work and the trauma work, because they really start to understand the patterns that might have gotten them into this place, and then reemerge with kind of what patterns need to be rethought, you know, what soul purpose, you know, need to be like reignited and rethought, you know. And so it's like the more that you can lean in when you're recovering, like this is scary and uncomfortable and, you know, of course, you know, uncertain, but there's such a transformation through this process if you can have that perspective going through it. And I am sure you see that with your work as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's when people are open to investing in themselves over a long period of time, and long is relative to whatever you want to make it to be. It could be a few months, it could be a few years, right? For me, it was definitely at least 5 to 6 years and ongoing, if you will. But that investment at a trickle over a long time, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you had that experience.
Thank you. And I'm glad that you're doing the work to help guide people in those experiences.
Thank you.
So I want to talk to you a little bit more about interference fields, because I think that's something that we went by kind of quickly and that you mentioned, but that is going to be relatively new information to a lot of people watching. So if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So scars are an interference field. So again, blocking the body's ability to self-regulate and heal. And then in bioregulatory medicine, we can have these areas, what we call focal infections. So they can be these kind of isolated kind of areas that have been, you know, cloaked or kind of, you know, hidden from the immune system, where for various reasons, you know, just epigenetic, toxicant burden, you know, injury, you know, so forth, there could be a buildup of or like a kind of a home base or a reservoir of infection that the body cannot, you know, I mean, I believe in anything's possible, but for what most people, you know, perceive is that the immune system can't really kind of overcome that and heal that tissue and regenerate and repair. There's something blocking that ability to happen. And so these areas can be very draining to the body. So just think about it. Like if you have a root canal tooth, you know, like, oh, it looks fine. It doesn't hurt. It's not, you know, doing anything, you know, bad, but then like slowly, you know, bacteria is accumulating, and then the, you know, entry from the mouth to the rest of the body, it's a really easy access highway for, you know, those bugs to continue to propagate. And then when we think about the surrounding lymphatics, you know, in the, you know, neck, you know, those, you know, infections can migrate in the neck, and then also they can affect the vagus nerve, you know, just thinking about the dental component. And, you know, so then you think, okay, like I have lymphatic congestion, do I have a cardiovascular issue? Do I have a systemic issue? Do I have a vagus nerve issue? And you might have all those things, but what's the true root cause, right? And when you kind of offload and, you know, working with, again, if it's a dental issue, working with a great biological dentist and a good team, you know, doing that with all the right support, you know, getting that kind of, you know, area treated, and, you know, in a root canal, we have to get that removed because it's dead tissue, basically gets, you know, that cause of inflammation and infection out of the body. And then the body can overcome all of the things that, you know, that was stirring up. So the lymph can get restored. The vagus nerve can come back online. You know, the pathogens can, you know, kind of become avirulent, and, you know, the microbiomes can be, you know, kind of more imbalanced in the body. So that's kind of one example. The other kind of common ones in our area of kind of work are the sinuses. You know, a lot of times people have like mold, in fact, mold in their environment, and then that can get colonized in their sinuses. And then again, that can be like a, you know, home base for kind of mold spores to produce mycotoxins and then disrupt the microbiome in the sinuses. And then the proximity from the sinuses to the brain, right, that can create a whole like host of hypothalamic, pituitary, and also microglia activation, creating the, you know, more brain inflammation. So someone's like, oh, I have, you know, depression, I have like a pituitary issue, I have a, you know, like, oh my gosh, my brain's like really inflamed and I can't get control of it. And okay, they do all the things, but okay, did they really address, you know, kind of this, you know, sinus issue? And then everything's way easier to treat, if that makes sense. And then the last kind of area is the tonsils. And, you know, the tonsils are kind of that front line of defense, right? We're inhaling our environment, and they can be affected. If you have dental issues, that can drain into the sinuses. You know, again, if you have recurrent strep or recurrent like Epstein-Barr or any of these other, you know, pathogens that kind of take hold, that can take hold of that tissue. And then that can create a lot of inflammation. And again, because of the proximity to the brain and also the top of the gut, you know, can create, you know, this chronic prolonged inflammation. So if you're having gut brain issues or lymphatic congestion, you know, in, you know, your lymphatics not draining as well, or, you know, neuroinflammation, as we talked, or just like chronic, you know, reflux and H. pylori, or, you know, what have you, like, have you looked upstream or kind of found this like area where you can create more, you know, balance and more immune recognition and immune modulation, then those kind of symptoms that are secondary that feel kind of primary end up, you know, resolving. So that's our view, and that's kind of how my patients have taught me to interact with interference fields.
Oh, that's such a fascinating part of it. I mean, and I don't know when it happened. I'm sure that somebody will write me an email and tell me, but when we dissociated the head from the rest of the body, right? Like, it's such an important part of our wellness and our connection. And it's all.
Oh, totally. You know, I feel like I'm treating people like from here, you know, on a physical level. And then of course there's, you know, energetic and emotional levels too on that level, but it's like very much, you know, here I'm trying to like create movement and flow and kind of balance the body, and then everything else gets back online. But yeah, I'm with you with that, Megan, for sure.
Right. Yeah. I interviewed another contributor, Donna Jackson Nakazawa, for last year's trauma conference and also again this year, but she did an entire book about microglia because she was just so fascinated about the immune system and the brain and inflammation and how little we understand about it. And so I've been, Oh, yeah, it's fascinating.
I mean, when you think about it, when I was in school or right, you know, soon after, I mean, we didn't even know about the glymphatic system, which is the lymph system in the brain. We still kind of think like that, you know, blood-brain barrier, you know, was this great wall of China, and like there was no microbiome in the brain, you know, very little immune activity. So, you know, this idea, like, I mean, we're very advanced in our understanding, but there's so much more to learn. And that's why I really have a love for the kind of the bioenergetic kind of biophysical layer, because I think it's just like so untapped and there's so much to explore there, and we'll be learning, you know, in my lifetime.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. It feels new, and yet it's not too terribly new. It's just new to mainstream, right? And there's so much more that we have to learn and that we'll learn soon. And I was actually just explaining to my son in very middle school terms, the role of sleep for the brain and how we're kind of detoxing our brains every day. And yeah, I was, you know, talking about the little trash trucks that metaphorically go through your brain and clear out all the junk. And
yeah, but again, you know, sharing like how we're really, you know, wired to work, and at a young age, I think, you know, the more, I have a 4.5-year-old, so we do certain things, you know, as well. And, you know, it's just so, you know, what a gift, right? To understand how we really work, right?
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of that, we also not blew by, but you've mentioned it a couple of times, but just for anybody who's new to this and learning along with us, the lymphatic system, I think a lot of people more than normal have, more than typically have become a little bit aware of it because gua sha has really gotten popular. And so we're talking
about. I have one in my desk here. You know, when I do phone calls,
Oh, nice. When you're not on camera. Yeah. Oh, that's nice. I've never considered that. I don't really do mine on the walking treadmill. So I think it might be too much for me to go talk and also do on the treadmill, but
that's right. Yeah. Too coordinated for sure.
Yeah, for sure. But I think that's kind of the limited, knowledge that most people, if they have any information about the lymphatic system, that's their knowledge. So if you could give us kind of a little breakdown of that, why it's important to us, and what that system takes care of in our bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm excited to see how much more awareness it's gotten over the years, which is wonderful. But again, still, we have a lot to explore. So you were mentioning the glymphatic system, which is the lymph system in the brain that happens when we sleep. Our brains actually shrink, and a lot of our why we really need deep and REM sleep, not only to heal, trauma, actually, a big part of REM sleep. There's an awesome book about sleep. I went down the sleep rabbit hole because I created a product around sleep. And, often people who have PTSD don't make that, that it's really hard to get in that threshold into REM as often as we need because they don't have enough GABA in their systems because of all the chronic trauma and stress. And REM sleep is a time when our brain is completely free of noradrenaline. So it's actually a time like a reset button, for our brain. And there's a lot of information about how trauma gets consolidated, and people who sleep better are more emotionally stable, and a side note there, but there's that lymph system in the brain. And then the lymph system is just like a body-wide network that's really tied tightly to the circulatory system. And there's two key pieces of the lymphatic system. It's an immune surveillance system. So it helps to engage what we're always being exposed to and help mount a healthy response. And there's also a drainage and detoxification piece. So I mentioned the fascia and the scar tissue. So the lymph is kind of within the fascia. Again, in the human body, there's everything's interconnected. There's not these, this is the lymph
system. Separate systems. Yeah.
That's just how the human body thinks about it. And so it's really, important in training the extracellular matrix and keeping that pre-lymph flowing, in that space. And when there becomes impaired drainage, and it's again a body-wide network. So if there's stagnation in one area, it can affect another area. There can be a buildup of metabolic waste or toxicants, and kind of a breeding ground for bugs. And that's where disease begins. And that's, Alfred Pischinger, Dr. Pischinger, who was an Austrian physician, who really was like, it's not just about the cell. The cell is nothing without the environment of the cell. And that's what dictates whether disease, begins. And so it's really important. And then, a lot of my friends who we treat the lymphatics, and we kind of have all of our tools, and we, see people with so many, varying conditions, there's also a really, I think there's a energetic and an emotional component to the lymphatic system. And, when people have stagnant lymph and all of a sudden get their lymph moving, just kind of like how we get their scar tissue moving, there can be a release of emotions. One of my friends, talks about how, the lymph is about letting go, right? Letting go and moving through. And, again, health is complicated, but it's pretty simple on one level. It's like where there's stuck energy, stagnation, that's where usually healing is not as easy to happen. And then our job is to restore flow and coherence and communication, and, the releasing of all the physical layers, but also the emotional layers, so the body can really communicate and does what it, we just step out of the way and let it do what it needs to do. Lymphatic work is a really big part of our you know, protocols. We use a lot of things internally, a lot of things topically. You know, we mentioned gua shas, you know, there's even, you know, tuning forks you can use on your body. There's different, you know, therapies, there's different equipment. So there's a lot more information out there, which is awesome. And, you know, really quick, you don't need to have huge swelling or like just had to have a surgery to have lymphatic congestion. Some of the thinnest people I've seen have had the most stagnant lymph. And so I just, well, yeah, I think that's a mental model. Sometimes we haven't really accepted like lymph congestion in mainstream because people think it has to be like this swollen kind of like really bloated kind of tissue or what, if the lymph isn't moving. So it's in the small spaces that really matter in the body.
Yeah, the thinnest people in my family all have high cholesterol, even though they eat the healthiest and they work out. So I kind of compare it to that, right? Like it doesn't, you don't have to have visible dysfunction to have lymphatic dysfunction and need attention there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's a really rewarding system to treat. People often feel a lot better when they get their lymph moving.
Amazing. So for people at home, how can they start paying attention to these systems and start seeking help from people like you to kind of get this in line? Or if it's not available to them where they live or they don't have accessibility to that right now, what can people start doing to start paying better attention to these systems in their body and taking care, better care of themselves?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, there are more and more of us out there, you know, but I think the functional nutrition and medicine community are a great bridge. You know, there's going to be, you know, within that community, people who think more and more like myself, you know, with some of the things that I'm sharing. But, you know, really take a checklist. So, you know, like if you're, you know, really stuck out there and you're not seeing results, okay, do you have an interference field, you know, that might be quite significant? Have you really, really took a, you know, inventory of your environment and terrain? Have you explored looking at the body from the biophysical layer and explored, you know, energetic modalities, you know, things like, you know, light and sound and frequency and acupuncture and meditation? You know, have you even explored that? Because that could be a missing piece to actually be the thing that gets your system moving in concert with everything else. And then are you really, you know, living a life of really trying to, you know, support your organs of elimination and doing something each day to move your lymph, to sweat, to, you know, make sure you're having healthy bowel movements, you know, make sure that you're digesting your food, you know, and staying hydrated and, you know, breathing. And so all of these things, you know, take inventory. And then, you know, I'm a student of this, but, you know, I really try to, you know, have a meditation practice in my life. You know, most mornings I try to, even if my daughter is waking up and, you know, wanting to distract me, I still keep going. You know, I just try not to get too upset about it and let her play. Or like sometimes she wants to, you know, lay on me and, you know,
I was gonna say, crawl on your lap, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. Today she did. And she was like, Mom, why aren't you going like this with your hands when you're meditating? You know, I was like, you know, and you try to just, you know, it's a good exercise because that's life, right? Life is like all the distraction in the world, but how do you maintain that commitment and that connection, right? You know, throughout your process. So, you know, there's a lot of great resources for meditation. If you're new to this, you know, there's like equipment, like the brain tap that can be guided. If that's something that people need more experience with, you can look on like online. Tony Robbins has like a priming exercise. That's kind of like a really kind of good way to start, where there's usually an equation of opening your heart and thinking about what you're grateful for, and then kind of envisioning your day and rehearsing kind of what you need to see. There's also the people at HeartMath who are really doing amazing work. I just love what they're doing there, Dr. Roland McCrady. And, you know, really that we're in charge of our own heart rate and rhythm. And the more that we're in these states of gratitude, love, and appreciation, we have a stronger electromagnetic signature that we're kind of generating from our heart that's informing our brain, that's informing the rest of our body. And we were wired to actually be in a healing state when we're in those states of gratitude, appreciation, and love. And then, you know, life's life, of course, we're going to feel anger and all these emotions that I'm not saying we don't feel, but if we stay stuck in them, then our body does the opposite. We get in a very incoherent rhythm. them a very disorganized, flow of information. And, we become disempowered, less energized, less empowered. And again, that's where potentially disease can begin. So heart math is another one. I've been also down the Joe Dispenza rabbit hole, and that's been pretty transformative. And so I think that's really been a huge, I think he's really onto something. But there's, these ancient principles that are, getting reawakened through this modern life lens, right? Now, and something I, if you're struggling out there and just don't know where to turn, or you like feel really kind of, how am I going to afford this? Who am I going to find? I'm a really big believer in group intention, and group healing. And sometimes, we don't know, right? Our mind doesn't understand how we're going to get the help we need or how we're going to get the support we need. And we just can't even make sense of it. And that can feel really scary. But when you surround yourself with a group of people who have the shared focus to intend for you to see a shift, to move towards health and healing, we're wired to do that, I believe. And I think that's a very untapped experience, not only in the clinical model, but in, life, right? Like when you need support, call on a few friends, do a, meditation circle or group intention circle or a prayer circle. Like we've become so disconnected from that. There's lots of words from that, but this is the work of, Lynn McTaggart and Joe Dispenza has coherence healing. So they've really kind of shown, the validity of that. And I've had some pretty profound experiences, not only in my own life, but seeing them in my patients' life. Sometimes when I'm stuck or I don't know what to do, I always offer that, option as we're kind of getting more and more, information for that patient, because we have to let room for the divine to enter our life, whatever that means for you. I'm not super religious. I just believe there's a higher power. And, when you look at also the world through the lens of this highly interconnected field that, surrounds us, participate with it, play with it, and, explore it. Because I think if you don't know where to start, start with educating yourself there and, looking into these rabbit holes I've shared. And I know that there'll be something there for you.
Fantastic. And then if somebody is ready to work with someone like you, how do people find out more about you and your work?
Oh, thank you, Megan. I have a website, drchristineschaffner.com. I have a podcast and just kind of a basic information about what I'm up to is on that site. And then I have a clinic in Seattle, and we do a lot of telemedicine as well. And it's called Imminence Health. And imminence is a word that kind of came to me. It was inspired. And I didn't even really know what it meant. And I looked it up, and it really means the divine within. So, really our kind of mission is to really ignite that healing capacity that we all have within.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Megan.